51 years ago, polls in the two leading jazz magazines, Metronome and Downbeat, selected pianist Dave Brubeck's group as the best instrumental group of the year. 5 years later, Brubeck was on the cover of Time magazine. In 1959, the Dave Brubeck Quartet recorded Time Out, which included the tune Take Five. It became the first jazz album to sell a million copies. The album illustrated the group's approach to counterpoint and lightly swinging, eccentric rhythms, as in the song we're listening to now, Three to Get Ready. There have been many milestones in Dave Brubeck's life and career. He'll mark another one next Tuesday, when he celebrates his 85th birthday. Terry spoke with him in 1999. She asked about his childhood in California. His mother was a music teacher and pianist. His father was a cattle rancher. The family took over a large cattle ranch when Dave Brubeck was 11 years old.
My dad was the manager of the 45,000-acre ranch, but he owned his own 1,200 acre ranch, and I owned four cattle that he gave to me when I graduated from grammar school from the eighth grade. And those cows multiplied, and he kept track of them for years for me, and that was my herd.
You know, I'm used to seeing you behind the piano. It's hard for me to imagine you as a cowboy.
Well, I could send you pictures. And there even are some what we call movies in those days, some of the very first kind of home movies where I'm with my dad lassing and branding and big roundup. So it is documented.
Did you sing cowboy songs?
Oh, all of them, yeah. When they were real cowboy songs, like Strawberry Roan, and Little Joe the Wrangler, tunes that people don't sing anymore. I love those songs. The words can still make me cry, and I used to make my kids cry by singing, Joe, you take my saddle. Bill, you take my bed. Jim, you take my pistol after I am dead. And think of me, please, kindly, when you look upon them all, for I'll not see my mother when the work's all done next fall. Now, that's a cowboy tune.
Did you like singing?
Oh, yeah. I used to sing that, play my ukulele.
Ukulele? No, wow.
Some of my friends played guitar, cowboy songs, yeah.
Let me get back to what we were talking about, which was life on the cattle ranch. And there were two cattle ranches in your life, the one your father owned and the larger one that he managed. Did you have really strong arms and hands from the work, and do you think that that helped you as a piano player?
It didn't hurt. My mother would not allow my dad to have me rope anything larger than a yearling because she didn't want my fingers to become hurt. And my uncle, who was also a rodeo roper, got his finger caught between the saddle horn and the rope, and it took his finger right off. And he used to kid the other cowboys and said, I would have been a great pianist like my nephew Dave had I not lost his finger.
Now, I think in spite of the fact that you studied piano with your mother as a boy, you weren't very good at reading music. How well could you read when you started majoring in music in college?
I couldn't read. And that caused a lot of trouble in the conservatory. So I hid it until I was a senior by not taking piano. I'd take the other instruments were cello and clarinet, and so that I was just playing scales and getting by and doing the subjects I had to pass in. But in my senior year, they said, you have to take piano. And the piano teacher, in 5 minutes, ran downstairs to the dean and said, Brubeck can't read at all. So the dean said, you know, you're a disgrace to the conservatory, and we can't graduate you. And when some of the younger teachers heard this, they went to the dean and they said, you're making a big mistake, because he writes the best counterpoint that I've ever had, said Dr. Brown. And Dr. Bodley went in and said, you're wrong. You know, this guy is talented. So they convinced the dean to let me graduate. And the dean said, you can graduate if you promise never to teach and embarrass the conservatory. So that's the way I graduated. And that's the way I've gotten through life, is having to substitute other things for not being able to read well. But I can write, which is something very few people understand.
Now, your first record that I think really made an impression on the record-buying public, I mean, it got bought a lot, was A Jazz Goes to College.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sessions recorded at three different colleges.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a picture of you on it, and you're wearing your glasses. And those glasses were really such a part of your image. And I think in part because that record was Jazz Goes to College, and in part because of those kind of thick plastic glasses, you maybe had the image of being what was known in those days as an egghead?
I wish I had. I'm not that smart. But people forget that at the same time we had a huge following at places like the Apollo Theater,
mm-hmm.
the Howard Theater in Washington, and the universities they used to call black universities, Afro-American universities. We played the so-called black clubs all through the South, where no white people came in. And in some of the black clubs, we were the only white group that came in. This is what I wish people would remember.
Mm-hmm.
And we integrated many, many universities in this country. And those are important things to remember. It wasn't just Ivy League places. We were really doing some work that people seem to forget how hard it was to do, where you had to have a police escort to the concert. The president of the college refusing to let you go on, and the students demanding you go on. I could tell you a lot of stories about that.
The problem was that you were white, or that one of the musicians in the band was black?
Eugene Wright was black, yeah.
So that was the problem.
And we couldn't do some television shows, because in those days, you couldn't have black and white together. One show I had to turn down, Duke Ellington took, because at the moment he had an all-black band. Sometimes Duke would have a white drummer like Louis Belson, and that would maybe give him problems. They just didn't want mixed groups on television.
Let me play what might be the most famous of the Brubeck Quartet recordings, and that's Take Five, which recorded in 1959. Would you talk about this composition? It's a Desmond composition, but I think you worked with him on it.
Yeah, Paul has done a radio show in Canada before he died, where he said, I'm so fortunate that Dave assigned me to do the section in 5/4, because that was the one track I wanted Paul to do as a solo for my percussionist, the great drummer Joe Morello, because Joe would often play in 5/4 time backstage, which is a time signature that was very rarely, if ever, used in jazz. So I would hear Paul start to improvise over Joe playing on a drum pad before you'd go on stage. And so I said, just write some of the melodies, the ideas that you're doing, and bring it to rehearsal in a few days. So that's what happened. He came and he had some ideas that I thought were great. The first thing he said, I can't write anything in 5/4. I've tried and tried. I said, let me see what you got. So he showed me what he had, and I said, I can put this together, and it'll be great. And I put what he had together as theme one, theme two, and that's how the thing was born. And I named it Take Five, and he objected to that name. And I said, why, Paul? And he said, nobody knows what Take Five means. What does it mean? I said, everybody knows but you, Paul Desmond, what Take Five means. So I argued with him, and I kept that title, which I think is a great title. Then, of course, I later wrote the words to it. So I had a little bit to do with this tune.
Well, before we hear it, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your early career. It's really been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Terry.
Dave Brubeck, speaking with Terry Gross in 1999. Next Tuesday, Brubeck celebrates his 85th birthday. He's still performing. Tonight, he plays in Munich. He'll celebrate his birthday next week at a concert with the London Symphony in London. Thank you.